He figured out batting 250, 300 is good enough. He batted 278. Derek batted 640. Derek, I said, you get on base even if you have to step into the pitch, son. And that's what he did. He also had more walks. He says, if you get behind on the count, just step into the pitch, son. And that's what he did. Now, he'd come with lumps, and my wife was always busting my back about it. He says, he's going to get hit in the head one of these days. And that's exactly right. That's exactly what I said. He's wearing a helmet. Now, the only way he got knocked out is one day I was pitching to him, trying to practice with him, and I knocked him out myself because we weren't wearing helmets. And I bring him home, and he's got the string of the baseball on his cheek. And my wife says, what the hell happened? Did Dan throw the ball at him? And we said, we're not going to tell Mom about this. And then as soon as I leave to go someplace, my wife's working on him, trying to get him. She says, Dad hit me with a baseball, but I promise not to say. But he wasn't preconditioned. Now, it would be almost impossible for him to do it next year because now he knows. He led the league in batting. They won the title, their little title. And so it's going to be impossible. But you have been preconditioned. One of the things that I'll tell you, and we have a banker in the room, right? Yes, I could tell by some of my bankers. I'm here to tell you, all interest rates are negotiable. They are negotiable. My mother and father would never even dream to negotiate a mortgage rate. That's all I would do. I mean, I don't care what the bank says. But there's many, many things that we do in business that we've been preconditioned. Let me give you another example of quantum geometric thinking. When President Kennedy, and they just opened some deal in Boston for John Kennedy Museum, a new wing, on that day that he was inaugurated in 1960, he pointed at the moon and said, within this decade, we will put a man on the moon. Anybody remember that?
Yeah.
And it'll come back safely, it'll be before the Russians, and there was all kinds of other things. Do you realize, as we know it today, there was no NASA. We had no infrastructure. We didn't even have a rocket that could get a 200-pound payload up. We didn't have rockets as good as Scud missiles. A lot of things happened, didn't they? And we put that guy on the moon, and on October something or other, I take one step for whatever he said, giant step. That's what I profess. When you're in your business plan and when you're thinking about your business, pretend that you're a long jumper, 30 foot. All they look at is the 30 feet. They don't look at all the things that happen in between. They look at their mark that they hit off of, and they look at the 30 foot, and that's all. They're not thinking about all the machinations they have to go through. When President Kennedy said that, he didn't think about all the machinations. When I set a $2 billion goal and to be in the highest paid executives in the United States, I didn't think of all the machinations. A lot of things happen. When energy gets going, momentum they call it, positive momentum feeds on itself. Success begets success. And successful people want to do business with successful people. I made a comment at the convention. I said, when I play golf, I either play golf with somebody that's better than me, which is hard to find because I'm a good golfer, or it's somebody that's in a place that I want to be. I play golf at Bel Air Country Club a lot, and it has more retired Fortune 500 CEOs of any other country club in America. I mean, every foursome has got three retired CEOs, either that or Jerry West, general manager of the Lakers. I mean, and when what's his name from Boston says, I'll play with anybody as long as they can take off work in the afternoon. And what I'm here to say is you are what you think about. You're going to be who you are, who you hang around. And it's especially important, even if you're not a youngster, because you can change preconditioned thinking. You can. I've seen people change, you know, like Ray Kroc, 57 years old. You know, you only hear about a few of those, because only a few of the people that when they get to that age, or in their 60s or 70s, only if you believe that you can change your thinking. You can. And I have changed my thinking just since I heard Ted Turner say, son, his father speaking to him, set goals that you can't accomplish in your lifetime. And that's changed my life, and I'm 48. Thank you very much.
Fun part's the question.
Yes, sir.
Dan, what the hell do you do for relaxation?
I lift weights. I run on a running machine. I don't run outdoors anymore. And I Stairmaster. And that's what I do. I normally try to do that an hour a day. It depends on what time of the day. I have a gym in my home. I have an office in Los Angeles. I only go to it 2 days a month, 1 day every other week. I don't go into my office. I found the office too disruptive. It's 4 million calls and thousands of, oh, not thousands, a lot of faxes. And so I don't do, I have an office at my home, and I have an office in my home in Houston and at the castle. So, but I work, I get up normally at 7 in the morning. I'm in the office by 7:30, my office in my home. And although I may go to a Little League game or my daughter's ballet, which is one of the reasons I stay home now, is because I want to try to, I don't like to use the word make up for the years I wasn't there. In 1987, there's a thing that I call pay price to action. It's what you're willing to pay for the success that you think you want. Because all the problems and challenges, and I still call them problems. I don't like this 90s challenges crap. I mean, they're problems. If, let's just say we're all 10 pounds overweight. We know what it takes to lose 10 pounds, don't we? We don't care. We still drink, eat. At least I do. I should lose 10 pounds. So what? I like to drink a half a bottle of gin every night, and I don't care. You know? We all know what it's going to take to make our business grow stronger. In 1987, I was away from my family 242 days. 242. Only reason I know that is because the Inland Revenue, the taxing authority in the UK, chases my butt, and they keep track of me going in and out of the country. And at that time, I lived in the United Kingdom. And my daughter was just born. She carries a British passport. She was just born. So the first year of her life, I was gone 242 days. I tell my wife, she didn't know. Now, psychiatrist buddy of mine says, Dan, they know when you're not there. You know, that's that. So, you know, they know. So that was a price that I was willing to pay. And so for relaxation now, I try to make it part of my work. And I take my children once in a while to hear me speak. My son was here. I gave a big speech, commencement speech, where I went to school a couple years ago. And the reporters came up and asked him, Dan Jr., they call him Mr. Pena, what do you think of your dad's speeches? I've heard that all my life. And he said, which I made him not put in the paper, he says, that's that five credos crap dad preaches. He says, I heard that all my life. And unlike most journalists, he kept his word and he didn't put it in the five credos crap. Wouldn't sound great coming from a 10-year-old kid. But I find business relaxing. I find making money a lot of fun. It sure as hell better. You know, I've been poor and I've been rich. And I, you know, whoever said that too, I mean, I like it. And all these guys, you know, like Rick Scott and these guys, I've wrote a letter to Rick here recently to ask him if he would consider doing some of my castle seminars in the summer for old time's sake, because he's from Scotland. His family's Scottish, so maybe he will. But, I mean, they find business relaxing. I like to play golf. You know, I'm a pretty good golfer. But I find this invigorating. I mean, Joe asked me, Every time I say, why do you want to do this, Dan? This is a tough business. I plan on dominating the personal development business. Everybody in, is this still?
Yeah.
Oh.
You can say it, I'll clean it up.
Okay. Everybody that is in the personal development business today, including the very biggest names.
Like what?
What?
Like what name?
His last name, it starts with an R. Doesn't have a pot to piss in. They got no money. And all the money they do have, they made it by selling tapes, books, and putting asses on seminar seats. I'm the only guy in the country that we can find that has really built a company, not once, but twice and three times, that's actually doing this. So I can relate to your problems. You ask some of your business problems to some of these other guys, they look at you like, they give you some hocus-pocus marketing answer, you know, make more phone calls, or I mean, insurance, I heard a guy, an insurance salesman say, well, how do I get my sales up? Make more phone calls. Now, the guy knew that. I mean, he didn't, but he wanted to know about, and I sold insurance. I was once the leading insurance salesman on Wall Street in the 70s.
Tell us about your castle in Scotland. Why do you live in Scotland? What's it like?
In 1984, I moved to the UK. That was part of a goal that I had, and I took my company public, and I retired at age 39 because that was a goal I had. If I had set 35, see, by the way, I don't believe in time limits to setting goals, and we don't have time to go through that, but I retired, and I wanted my family to be raised in a different social economic milieu than my wife and I. My wife's adopted. I'm an only child. My dad was a policeman. Her dad was a meter reader. Is that right? Gas meter reader, yeah. And I wanted to be in a different environment, so we moved there, and we found a great estate. Lloyd's of London is called the finest appointed estate in the United Kingdom. It's a very special place. It's cost a lot of money to refurbish, and it's one of the great places in Great Britain. And when I decided to go in this business a year ago, I decided I wanted to have, and I believe the chairman of Chemical Bank said what he was saying is perception is reality, and yesterday's dreams are today's realities. That was my dream, and what better metaphor to teach people in. So I give a very closed workshop, if you will, a week seminar. I only take six couples. And we sit, we dress for dinner twice a week, black tie. Peter, my butler, serves his cognac in the library, and we discuss business problems. We play a lot of golf, a lot of tennis. We only work at the seminar 4 or 5 hours a day for four days and one day, a half a day. And because it's light till 10, 11 o'clock at night, for those of you that play golf or tennis, I mean, we have a lot of fun. And we've isolated or devoted 3 weeks in May, and in May, beginning of June, for the CEO Club. I give many more than three. And you'll be getting a letter in the next week or two that outlines it, and we're going to have a lot of fun. We've already got a lot of interest from CEO Club members, and we've already got a lot of people that are going. But it's a great place to have a lot of fun, and it's if you want to be pampered and live in the lifestyle that you should get used to. And that's the whole point of it. It's like when I take people from the barrio to my place in California overlooking the Pacific Ocean, it's because I want to show them that you can do it in your lifetime, just like I did. I take them to where my house was in the ghetto, and I take them to my place, 3.5 acres overlooking Pacific Ocean, and I show them pictures of the castle, because you can do it. And you can do it in my lifetime, and it doesn't take that long. I mean, if you're willing to, how much you want to sacrifice. Yes, sir.
There are a few things that you mentioned that I wanted to ask you about. Reception is reality. You also mentioned that cost is not the issue, but revenues are.
Cost control.
Correct. Revenues are. With those things in mind, and also thinking in terms of a quantum leap in your thinking process, going from where you are today to that unachievable goal, how would you deal with delegation? And also related to that would be, if you are conceived, presumably you have an organization in your company now, which is coping with the situation as it is. How do you make that quantum leap?
It's a good question.
How do you restructure that?
Okay. Quickly, number one, if you're a control freak and you can't delegate, and you can't give, or you won't give, because you can, you won't give full authority and full responsibility. And if you won't promise not to eat their butt out when they make a mistake, and if you won't do those things, then what I'm about to say is impossible. Because you have to delegate both authority and responsibility. I allowed my employees to make million-dollar mistakes. Rick Scott on the front page of the Wall Street Journal just a few days ago said one of the reasons that he can run this big organization now with 138,000 employees, whatever he's got, is because he allows all his little district managers, which he's got jillions of, to make million-dollar decisions without going up the ladder. Now, you know that a lot of those million-dollar decisions are going to be wrong. First of all, because it's the first time they're ever making them, and they're not used to it. But he knows, so you have to let loose. Less control is more control. I couldn't have made a fraction of what I did if I had kept the reins in tight. And you got to realize they're going to make mistakes. It's like your kids, for those of you that have kids. I mean, they make mistakes. And you show them the values, and hopefully as they grow older, I'm not there yet, so I'm a little weak on the kid raising part, not on the business growing part. I mean, that they'll learn. I allowed my people to make many, many decisions. And when I came in, it was only when they had a big, big problem. We bought Bow Valley USA in late 86, early 87, and my subordinates were handling it, and it fell out of bed. The Canadian government came down on us, Chemical Bank came down on us, everybody came down on us, and I came out of retirement to resurrect that. And so, but you've got to let loose. You've got to let loose. So, and to build the organization, the kinds of people you want are, one, people that will come during traffic, work Saturday nights, that don't know that there's Christmases, Hanukkah, birthdays. I've been on record as saying holidays, birthdays, Christmas, Hanukkah are for poor people. The reason why I celebrate Friday the 13th as my anniversary, even though I was married on Friday the 13th, is because I have missed 16 of 20 anniversaries. So my wife and I celebrate all Friday the 13th, because at least Dan's going to be home some of them. Okay? The only reason that my oldest son, who's born on January 1, I've been to most of his birthdays, because normally Ideal closes by New Year's Eve, and I'm home New Year's Eve to see my kid on January 1. All the rest of them, I was at the management course for Derek's birthday. I was in trial for Kelly's birthday. And you got to make those sacrifices. And more importantly, the people that work for you or that you're going to hire, you have to share your obsession with them. You have to make it their obsession. And the way I did it is money. Money. I gave away equity to all companies I started, to the key employees. I gave it. I didn't sell it to them. I didn't make it an option. I said, here's 10% of the company. Here's 10% of the company. Here's 5% of the company. And then when I got to be a public company, which you can't do that, then I gave them massive options. We had, you know, millions and millions of shares of options. Plus, we had all the other compensation things that we had. We had scholarship funds for their bright kids. We had scholarship funds for their dumb kids. I mean, we had a lot of things to make them a part of the growth process. Although, as I said at lunch, 10 years that we were in business, we lost money 2 years. The employees only bitched about the 2 years. They forgot the 40 or the 200% bonuses that they made in the good years, and that's part of life. I mean, I don't know how you overcome that. I wasn't successful at that. What I did very successfully is we only had 2 down years. I mean, I decided not to participate in the energy recession. And the businesses that I consult for now, I go through a whole Boraxo process. I don't care what the newspapers say. You know what? Try this. Take newspapers from 5, 10, 20 years ago, if you can get them at the library, Wall Street Journal, and read the columns. Same. Of course, CNN's different. CNN's different. But, I mean, it's the same. It's the worst recession in recent memory. It's the worst this. I mean, how many worstest, as my kids would say, can you have? I mean, it's not. It's not. They told Ted Turner he was a nut 10 years ago when he started, whenever he started CNN. 10? Yeah. I still remember. He's a nut. All these guys that have Vanguard ideas, they're nuts. Now, you know, maybe Mr. Turner is a little nuts, but he's my kind of nuts. I mean, for sure, he's my kind of nuts. And I find myself, the older I get, maybe it's the less tolerant I get. On one hand, I get more tolerant with people that I can't change because I know they're going to be that way forever. But I get less tolerant of people that make fun of people that are Vanguard, that do unique things. And I've been a guy that's been against the grain all my life. I mean, 86 times I've been told I can't do that, and 86 times I've been able to do it. Yes?
Last two questions, Susan and then Leslie. And don't forget to leave your name tags when we go. Susan?
Yes. Yes, ma'am.
I can't tell you how much I agree with you and would love to have you lecture to my company anytime.
By the way, I'm doing a special seminar for women. But anyway, I already told you that.
There's one thing that I'm concerned about and I'm confused about, and that is... What about integrity?
No. I didn't mean it that way.
You
have to draw the line.
Good business and fair business.
I've never done anything dishonest, immoral. But see, I thought what Michael Milken's principle of letting people find finance that couldn't, I'm 100% behind. What he did or what he purported to do or what they proved he did was obviously wrong. That's not what I mean. I mean his concept of taking people that couldn't find finance and developing the junk market business. By the way, I'm one of the first guys he ever turned down. My claim to fame, he turned me down. He didn't like my deal. It gave me that much more resolve. I know him through Lowell because one of my partners went to law school with his brother. So you have to draw the line. Integrity will out. One of the reasons that lawsuit was so important to me, and I won on all 32 counts, and the reason I didn't settle and I wanted a jury verdict is because the cloud is gone. Now all the people that say, Dan, it doesn't make any difference you got sued for all that stuff, when it really did. Even my bankers, now they love me again. Dan, we knew you'd come out. Where are you going to put that money, Dan? Where are you going to put that money? But no, integrity. My integrity, my honor is much more important. There's two or three things worth dying for, and that's one of them, your integrity.
Lovely. Last question.
Yes, ma'am.
How much do you think it would have cost you in terms of your success had you decided to make it a point to be there for your kids' birthday?
I don't know. All I know is a lot of deals that I did wouldn't have gotten done because there's a critical mass in a deal. There's a critical mass. There's a timing factor that when the deal, it's like an old friend of mine who's since passed away, used to be the president of our drilling company, said, Dan, there's a time to bring the cow home to milk. I mean, there's a time in a deal to bring the cow home to milk. And sometimes that's on your 16th anniversary. Sometimes that's on Christmas. You know, I made the Israelis sign my deal on the Sabbath at 10:30 at night Friday, because I was dealing with Orthodox, and they told me, and I knew I'd have the most leverage if I could get them past sundown on Friday night. And that's what I did. And it killed them. It killed them to do that. They said they wouldn't. I said, well, I'm leaving. So it was a bluff. It's like two cars going to collide. And they found out I'm on the way to the airport. And they had to stop me. They had to please stop me. And I said, they brought me back and we signed it. There's a time when the cow, you got to bring it home to milk. And a lot of times those are on days you ought to be with your loved ones. But I don't know anybody that made a lot of money in a balanced way. One closing comment. Napoleon Hill, in his book, Think and Grow Rich, and all his tapes, he interviewed 500 people over 20 years. Got paid no money. He said he was an idiot. Only three people of the 500, three, Burroughs, Edison, and Carnegie, were almost happy. Three of the 500. Super success ain't for everybody, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, if you want to hunt with the big dogs, you got to get up off the porch. Three, now just think of that. Three people out of 500. Thank you very much.
Good job. Leave your name tag and see it for Herb and Rita.
Hello, at the bottom. Hello. Nice to see you.
Good to see you again. How are you?
I'm fine, and you?
Good. Okay.
They did, and I have one of our staff members arranging a meeting. I'm just arranging a meeting with
I don't know if we're going to air it. We just wanted to see
my producer wanted to see
it.
Would you say Saturday night?
6:30 is when our show is. Come on, watch the show. I don't know.
6:30 Saturday night?
Thanks, Jeff. Yeah, give me a call if you come across any issue management.
Okay.
They don't care to replicate it.
Than anything I've ever seen before.
What kind of companies do you work with?
Yeah. Well, we're going to have one in Ohio, one in California. We're going to have one in the castle, too.
Municipalities?